Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Watch podcast. Today we're talking about the policy digests of the Zhengguan era. The year was 1615. The place was Japan. The Tokugawa shogunate, which enjoyed practical control, even though an emperor continued to sit on the chrysanthemum throne, issued a new law. Article 1 of the law required the emperor to study both poetry and a book called The Policy Digests of the Zhengguan Era. So, what was it? What was so special about this book that the emperor of Japan had to read it? I was reminded of the policy digests of the Zhengguan era recently because I wanted to write something about how Westerners seem to think Sun Tzu's Art of War is the be-all and end-all of Chinese strategic thinking. Newspaper and magazine articles and op-ed columns abound, analyzing modern Chinese policy according to some usually deeply flawed reading of Sun Tzu. Books on not only military strategy or politics, but business or even relationships and much else besides, line the shelves of airport bookstores, all promising to tell you how you can apply the ancient teachings of Sun Tzu to your realm of choice. The recently retired U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, was quoted earlier this year telling West Point cadets that the only two books they really need to read are Sun Tzu's Art of War and Von Kriege by Karl von Clausewitz. Well, that's certainly not how the Chinese see things. To the Chinese, the Art of War is only one of many books in the cultural tradition you should study if you wish to be a leader, especially as a military officer or in politics or business. I've talked earlier on this podcast about the seven military classics, the list of seven books that the Song Dynasty government required all its officers to read. Sun Tzu's Art of War was number one on the list, but still, it was only one of seven. And then, once we broaden our scope even further and think beyond books specifically about warfare, the Chinese canon offers several major works on grand strategy, big picture analysis meant to inform the reader on how and why countries grow strong or weak, why kingdoms and empires rise and ultimately fall. Policy Digests of the Zhengguan Era is one such book. It was written in the first half of the 8th century at the height of the Tang Dynasty, during the reign of Emperor Xuanzong. The author was a man named Wu Jing. He was born in 670 AD. In his early 30s, he entered the government's Bureau of National History. We have records showing that much later, in 737, when Wu Jing was 67 years old, he was back at the Bureau of National History. And he spent many years in between there as well. So we know that throughout his career, although he held other positions as well, he also kept returning to the work of the historian. At some point, he was appointed to a position of court advisor, or 建议大夫. I'm translating that term as court advisor, but that character in there, Jian, carries the specific implication of speaking truth to power, of going up to the ruler and telling him that he's wrong. So that was the responsibility of this position in Chinese imperial courts. In fact, during the Tang Dynasty, court advisors as a group had the authority to reject an imperial edict where they considered the edict manifestly unreasonable. During the reign of Emperor Zhongzong from 705 to 710, Wu Jing at great personal risk, openly pointed out to the emperor the conspiracies being plotted against the throne by some of the most powerful members of the court. Emperor Xuanzong came to the throne in 712. He was destined to go on ruling for decades, and during the first half of his reign, he proved himself to be a capable and decisive ruler. But his decisiveness and ability led to a concentration of power in the person of the emperor. And so Wu Jing went up to Emperor Xuanzong and urged him to listen to the advice of mandarins such as himself, even if he ultimately rejected the advice. The thing was that even though a young Xuanzong was capable, he was not as capable as the great Emperor Taizong, the second emperor of the Tang Dynasty, who reigned from 626 to 649. Although the early 8th century was called the height of the Tang, the fact was that, as the Chinese like to say, it is precisely when the sun reaches the zenith that it begins to dip. And one sign of creeping corruption within the Tang Empire could be seen at the Bureau of National History itself. The court historians of Xuanzong's era no longer enjoyed the prestige they had under Emperor Taizong. They were no longer encouraged to write freely and to speak truth, to record history as they saw it. This state of affairs within the Bureau of National History led Wu Jing repeatedly to try to resign from it, although, as I said, he never could get away entirely and wound up spending much of his life working there. But for the sake of his own conscience as a historian, he wrote what was considered a private history in his spare time. A private history in Chinese culture is just what other societies consider regular history books. A history book you write because you want to, not because the government asks you to do it. In Chinese tradition, the government always sponsored the writing of history as a part of its governing responsibility. So, writing a private history in which the author would be free to criticize whom he pleased could be a controversial matter. In 726, Wu Jing came forward and admitted to Emperor Xuanzong that he had been working on a private history, essentially seeking official approval for his private work. But approval was not forthcoming, presumably because he criticized someone he shouldn't have in the private history. 3 years later, Wu Jing presented another work to Emperor Xuanzong. This time, for his pains, he received a demotion and was made a provincial official. Maybe this new work somehow pissed off the powers that be again. Or maybe they were still upset about his private history from 3 years earlier. We have no way of knowing exactly, because in the end, the private history was not preserved. But the later work was preserved. And it was Wu Jing's magnum opus, Policy Digests of the Zhenguan Era. The Zhenguan Era was the period of the reign of Emperor Taizong, whom we already talked about, 626 to 649. Like I said, by the 8th century, although the Tang Dynasty was ostensibly at the height of its power, in many respects it was no longer as well governed as it was under Emperor Taizong a century earlier. Wu Jing clearly felt some level of nostalgia for that earlier time, a time when court historians enjoyed perfect freedom to write what they pleased. And Wu Jing's experience as a court advisor also clearly colored his writing of the digests. The book reports on and celebrates the reign of Emperor Taizong by presenting a series of dialogues drawn from the annals and other documents available to him in the Bureau of National History between Taizong and a number of court advisors and other officials. And Wei Zheng, the most famous court advisor from Taizong's reign, the man who could always be counted on to speak truth to power, comes across in these dialogues as a heroic figure. The portraits of Taizong, Wei Zheng, and other figures in the policy digests as well as specific chapters on the matter, emphasize the importance of candid policy debates in achieving good governance. And the dialogues are organized thematically, not chronologically. So conversations on the same topic, but from different time periods, are gathered together. These debates range across all aspects of imperial government, from recruiting competent officials, to the application of criminal law, to economic policy, to agriculture, to foreign affairs, and to the education of princes. Emperor Taizong of Tang went down in history as one of the most successful rulers in Chinese history. The age of Zhenguan was a time of both military and foreign policy successes abroad and economic prosperity at home. The Digests, then, serves both as a history book, recording and explaining Taizong's successes, as well as a manual and instruction book. Future rulers can study it to learn the art of government. And later Chinese emperors did learn from it. Emperor Qianlong in the 18th century went so far as to write a new introduction to the book. And like I said at the beginning, in Japan, the Tokugawa shogunate issued a law requiring Japanese emperors to study the digests. Although actually the Japanese example is a little strange, because by 1615, the Japanese emperor was already a chiefly ceremonial role anyway. So why did he have to study the art of government? I don't know the answer to that. I'll leave it to specialists on Japan to answer it. As I said, Wu Jing did not meet with approval when he showed the book to Emperor Xuanzong in 729, but neither did the government ban the book. After that, the book was probably simply preserved in Wu Jing's home as private copies. Later, after the Anshi Rebellion of 755 to 63 that tore through the Tang Empire, Wu Jing's grandson, Jiang Yi, became a court historian as well. Particularly due to the chaos brought about by the rebellion and civil war, books in the Imperial Library and materials in the Bureau of National History were in urgent need of reorganization. Jiang Yi took the opportunity. He brought his family's book collection, including his grandfather's magnum opus, into the Imperial Library, re-entering the digests into the official histories. Emperor Xianzong of the Tang, who reigned during Jiang Yi's time, took to studying the digests and often discussed it with Jiang Yi, who by now, being both a historian himself and the author's grandson, was the undisputed authority on the book. Three out of four of Jiang Yi's sons then became historians as well. And as aristocratic families took to borrowing books from the Jiang family and copying them, the digests began to spread throughout Chinese society. Printed copies began to appear in the 10th century. In the 11th century, the ruling elite of the Khitan Empire, coming into northern China, demanded a translation of the book so that they too could learn the secrets of Chinese governance. And from the Song Dynasty on down, as Emperor Taizong's reputation made him an object of emulation for all subsequent emperors, so the digests, being an authoritative work on the reign of Taizong, became a popular subject of study and debate. Although, of course, in many ways, the commentators weren't discussing the book per se, but the reign of Taizong it described. How successful was it really? What lessons might we draw? In the early Ming Dynasty, in 1370, the digest was reprinted. And again, in 1465, with a new introduction by the then reigning emperor Cheng Hua. One more printing occurred in 1798, during the Qing Dynasty. All modern Chinese versions of the book come from one of these printings, Outside of China, like I said, the digest received a great deal of attention in Japan. A fire destroyed the holdings in the Japanese Imperial Library in the late 9th century. Immediately afterward, acquiring new books to fill the library, Japanese librarians recorded acquiring a copy of the digests. By today, apparently over 20 versions of the digests can be found in Japan, although they're basically all variations on three different major versions. Whatever versions might have been available in 1615, the Tokugawa shogunate thought fit to require Japanese emperors to study the digests, a book written in a foreign country, China, some 900 years earlier, about events that took place there nearly 1,000 years earlier. And if, over all these centuries, Japanese scholars and political actors thought so highly of the book and tripped over each other to study it, maybe it behooves us today to read it as well. Certainly, it behooves us at least to know about it, to know that it exists and may be a significant source of grand strategic thinking for even today's Chinese leaders. No Chinese thinker or leader would claim, as General Milley claimed, that all you need to read is Sun Tzu's Art of War. This has been MODG. Thank you for listening.